From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Bayview Hunters Point.
Hayward.
Piedmont, California.
Pleasanton.
Falltown.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, we'll stop and really listen to the world around us.
We can fool the eye, but we can't fool the ear too well.
Sound ecologist Bernie Krause says if we really listen, we'll hear an animal orchestra out there, and we need to protect it.
Fully 50% of the habitats that I've recorded are now quiet.
Stay tuned for today's orchestra edition of Cross Currents.
So let's see here. All right, so blah, 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 blah.
To help us tune in to the sounds of the Bay Area and what they're telling us, we've got two sonic tour guides on the show today. Audiograph producer Julie Kane.
Martina, what did you have for breakfast today?
Oh, gosh, I had pastry.
And our managing editor, Martina Castro, who's also producer of a series called Audiophiles. Yes, audiograph and audiophiles sound similar but different. It gets a little confusing around here.
We like to think of it this way, that audiophiles is conversations with people who work in sound, and
audiograph is stories about places, people who live there. That's really about the sound of the place where they live and what it means.
Julie and Martina are actually up in Muir Woods. It's a perfect place to start using our ears to learn about places and people, the natural world, how it affects us, and how we affect it.
So in the Bay Area, you know, we think about all the environmental impact of almost everything we do all the time, but we don't really think about noise. Noise as pollution, right?
You might not think you generate that much noise, especially when you're just sitting there listening. But really think about the last time you just heard the wilderness, even deep in nature.
Why don't we take a little listen? Even here, our voices in this park, the airplanes we heard, these are noises that actually pollute the environment in a way we don't usually think about.
But some people do think about it, and there's actually a kind of field of study that looks at this. It's called soundscape ecology.
It's kind of like looking at how a chemical plant would affect a river, or how, you know, we impact the oceans with our plastic, like that kind of thing.
Or how, you know, our car exhaust, you know, puts a big hole in the ozone.
Yeah, so one of the people who studies soundscape ecology is Bernie Krause. And the reason we're here in Muir Woods is because he came here when he decided to first record the natural world.
I was terrified to go out there alone. I mean, I thought that was really wild. I mean, never mind that the paths were all paved and everything like that, and there was signage everywhere. You could never get lost in there. But I went marching off there, and the moment I turned on that recorder and I heard that sound through my headphones, and it was really mostly just ambience. It was wind in the trees, and there were a few ravens and blackbirds. I think there were probably a few jays around. And as soon as I heard that sound for the first time, it changed my life.
We talked to Krause about 45 miles from Muir Woods in his studio in Glen Ellen in Sonoma County.
You love the door sounds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Since that day in Muir Woods,
45 years ago,
he's recorded over 4,500 hours of soundscapes.
And he keeps a library of them here in his studio.
All right. So
let me know when you're ready.
We're ready.
Ready.
Okay. So take us on a tour. Where are we? What are we seeing?
Well, we're in my little lab, as it is. These are some of the tapes that I've recorded from around the world.
Can you read some of the names that are on the spines here?
Oh, we're looking at Nez Perce recordings up in Idaho. We're looking at Sumatra, Borneo, California, Oregon. Here's the Azores. Here's Antarctica.
Krauss says these recordings are unique sonic signatures of those places. They're as different from each other as Borneo is from Alaska.
And when you first listen to them, you might not be able to distinguish single sounds or animals. But after a while, a sort of organization starts to emerge from the cacophony.
It's pretty cool.
Take the state park surrounding Krauss's studio, for example.
First, the insects come in, and the insects start about August, late August, and they run through December. And then the frogs, the amphibians, and the reptiles come in to join the chorus, and they join the chorus about January after the first rains, and they're really loud.
Then the birds.
The birds are a constant all through the spring and into the summer.
And we hear coyotes and foxes barking and stuff like that, and they join the chorus later in April and May.
If you could really hear all of this with no interference, you might not need a calendar.
And the soundscape is just as important and vital an indicator of where we are in time and place as any thing I know. I mean, I can't imagine having a visual cue that's stronger than those sounds.
And yet, there's something even stronger tying all these sounds together.
Krauss first noticed it on a recording trip to Kenya.
I was out there, and it was late, and I'd been recording for 30 hours or something like that, and I lay down in my tent and had my microphone in outside the tent and the recorder inside, and I was just listening to the sounds, and I was thinking, I was imagining a musical score, and at the same time, I was thinking, hey, wait a minute, these critters are doing the same thing. This is like proto-music. This is like, maybe we got something here.
So when he got home, he pulled up a spectrogram.
That's a way to see sounds in a recording, kind of like looking at a graph of everything you're hearing. And there...
Sure enough, there were all these patterns there, and every critter was discriminated very clearly, just like notes on a page of music.
Wow, that's amazing. This is there.
It's beautiful to look at. Using various shades of yellows, purples, pinks, and reds, it shows you how loud sounds are and where they lie on a spectrum of frequencies.
For those of you who don't quite get what a frequency is, it's the wavelength of a sound as it travels through space. That might not make any sense either, but the important part is this. The higher the frequency, the higher pitch you hear. Some frequencies are so fast or so slow that humans can't even hear them.
But you can see them. It's hard to believe that we can really look at sound this way.
He shows us another spectrogram, this one he recorded in the rainforests of Sumatra.
Look how pretty that is.
Wow.
Krauss points out that you can clearly see each animal's call on the image, and there's a reason for that.
In wild habitats, if creatures want to be heard, and their lives depend on the sounds that they produce and receive, then they better have clear channels and bandwidth in order to be heard so that their voices aren't masked. Otherwise, they're not going to thrive.
Remember those 4,500 hours of recordings we mentioned earlier? Krauss has returned to several of those places.
And they've changed.
One example is a soundscape near an old-growth forest in the Sierra Nevada.
He recorded this in 1988, right before there was selective logging in the area. It was meant to be more sustainable than just clear-cutting a forest.
Krauss returned exactly a year later to the same exact place, and he says the forest looked the same.
But it sounded completely different.
Of the 4,500 hours I have, Fully 50% of the habitats that I've recorded are now quiet. So they're gone. You can't hear them anymore. Either they've been changed by human endeavor, or they're impacted by human noise, or, you know, they're paved over by a Walmart lot. But they're gone.
Is that something you can actually hear with your ears, like an unhealthy habitat?
Yeah, there are people who can hear that. We can't in our culture because hearing isn't really the top priority for us. It's not how we get our information. We get our information through mostly what we see. We're a visual culture. And what we hear kind of takes is a second-tier issue. But if we can hear well, then we need to be really quiet and listen to the natural world around us because it's healing. It's very informative. It has lots of information, tells lots of stories. It's a narrative of place. If you want to know where you are, listen to what's happening around you, and you can tell much more about the place that you're in by what you hear than by what you see.
That's Bernie Krause speaking with KALW's Julie Kane and Martina Castro. You're listening to an orchestra edition of Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. We're calling it an orchestra version of our show as an homage to Bernie Krause's book called The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. So how do you do that exactly? This is how Bernie Krause explains it.
First of all, you shut the hell up and you be really quiet and you stop talking and you stop thinking and you stop, you know, considering what you're going to do next, and you put your iPad away and your iPhone away, and you just pay attention to what's coming into those ears of yours, and you sit very quietly for long periods of time. For one thing, to learn this and to one of the things that I've used to learn it is a tool called a recorder, and if you have a recorder, you've got to be very, very quiet. You can't be rubbing your clothes. You can't be sniffing or coughing or scratching or stuff like that. You've got to be really quiet for long periods of time and let the sounds come into that instrument, that microphone.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is an audiophile's audiograph mashup edition of Cross Currents as we bring our environment into focus through our ears. That's the sound of a foghorn recorded by Ben Trefney and a dripping tap recorded by Mary Willis. We'll be bringing more of those to you throughout the rest of the show. To set up this next piece, we'll drop back in on our tour guides, Julie Kane and Martina Castro, in conversation with Bernie Krause.
Julie and I are in heaven as we make our way through some of Krause's favorite sounds in his library. This is the sound of wolves in Algonquin Park in Ontario, Canada.
There were two packs of wolves, one in front of me and one in back of me.
When Krause discovered the orchestral nature of the sounds he was recording, he thought he was onto something big.
As far as he knew, no one had done anything quite like this before.
Because all of the methodology to that time, and this is the early 80s, mid-80s, all of the methodology of recording in the field had been with the objective to fragment the soundscape, take things out of context and record them one at a time with these large parabolic dishes.
That's basically a microphone that looks like a satellite dish, and it works like a zoom lens on a camera, recording things that are far away.
Actually, the first guy to develop a parabolic dish was a fellow named Ludwig Koch, K-O-C-H. And he was a German fellow who moved to the U.K. And in 1889, recorded the first bird.
That's a clip of that recording, featured in a BBC radio documentary.
So let's back up for a second, because we've talked a lot about recording natural sound, but that's not the only kind of sound there is.
I mean, there are probably two components to natural sound. One is the biophony, which are all the critter sounds that occur naturally, and the other is the geophony, which are the sounds, the effects of wind and water and rain, natural sounds that are non-biological. And the third is made up of human sound and the human soundscape, anthropony, but it's organized in a certain kind of human way.
Biophony, anthropony, and geophony. Those words didn't exist when Krauss started his work. He actually was the first person to use the term biophony. Nowadays, though, there's lots of people thinking about soundscapes in their entirety. It's actually a field of study.
We've created, in effect, a new model for dealing with natural sound, both marine and terrestrial environments, that's now incorporated into graduate studies programs at Purdue and Michigan State, and it's gaining traction all over the world.
We'll come back to that discussion between Julie, Martina, and Bernie Krauss in a bit, but let's spend some time listening to anthropony, human-made soundscapes.
I found some of the 19th century jokes pretty funny.
Could you tell me one?
No, not on air. You know,
this is KALW's Casey Miner speaking with Andrew Roth, a sound designer who recreates soundscapes that no longer exist.
Andrew Roth and I are in the front room of the Conservatory of Flowers. It's a kind of misty atrium filled with plants from all over the world. To get into the Boomtown Show, which is about urban San Francisco in the 1850s, we have to walk by a 100-year-old giant philodendron that rises all the way to the ceiling. I also have to cover my microphone so it doesn't get rained on.
Usually by the end of each show, everything you see in this room is broken except for the sound. The trains stop running, the lighting's all dead, the cockroaches have eaten through something, all glue's fallen off, but the sound keeps going.
The sound. If you walk in and close your eyes, it's like entering a crowded party. There's clanking, people talking, laughing, music.
This show is definitely the most cacophonous of all the shows I've done.
It seems like everything we walk by makes some kind of sound. There's a wooden stall in the center of the room that does triple duty as a photo booth, music box, and brothel. More on that later. There's a model train running around a bunch of tiny buildings. A model ship filled with the yells of an imaginary crew.
Do you know what this sounds like through headphones?
Through headphones?
Yeah. Have you listened to just what it sounds like? Would you like to?
Sure. We're not really in front of any particular speaker right now, so we're getting the full messy mix. It actually doesn't sound too unlike an amusement park. But it's fun, because you hear things like the seagulls stick out, and somehow you do get a feeling that it's older. You're hearing older music. You're hearing... It's mostly the music that really brings it alive. There's so much music in this exhibit. It's not all going on at once, but it does sound like it.
Circling the exhibit feels like walking from place to place in a city, except you're actually walking from speaker to speaker. There are about 24 of them placed around the room, so the different sounds come in and out of focus as you walk around. The little pockets of music are especially delightful. Hearing them feels like stumbling upon a tiny concert in an alleyway, like you've slipped into something tucked away.
Can you tell me what I'm listening to right there?
That's a man named Tim Twiss on the East Coast. He plays a very old-style banjo. As you can tell, it doesn't sound like a bluegrassy banjo. It's a real gourd, strung with real catgut. So it's got a, and played in a very different style as well, so it's got a very mellow sound. And this is really what the banjo would have sounded like in the 1850s.
Catgut? Is that what you said?
Yeah, catgut. I think you have to order them from Europe now.
It's not easy to recreate the sounds of a bygone age. For one thing, you'll never really know if you got it right.
Basically, I try and do what I can with each sound, and then hopefully when you smush them all together in a mix, you get something that sounds just a little bit more original. Than, I mean, I could have taken a bluegrass banjo, steel string, modern banjo, and taken just an, some old-timey sounding piano and all that, and it would have worked for the majority of the guests.
Not for everyone, though.
Actually, if you could record this. So, yeah, starting. The melodeon in here, which is one of the first instruments I look for, is an 1852 melodeon restored by a guy who's incredibly historically accurate in his restorations. There's a whole subset of people, not a lot of them, and several of them are quite elderly, but their life is sort of dedicated to playing the right pieces in the right way, on the right instruments, made the right way.
Roth used a range of techniques to recreate the sounds of Boomtown. Lean into the central booth, and you can hear women laughing in a brothel. Really, museum staff drinking wine and telling 19th century jokes that Roth found online. Push a button near the entrance, and you can set off a really satisfying dynamite explosion.
All men clear out, she's gonna blow!
That's the sound of some other museum employees throwing furniture around an office. Circle the perimeter and you'll hear a Chinese musician, then sea shanties sung by local performers. The heave-hoing of a group of sailors bringing a ship into shore.
Hey, matey! Pull! Pull it! Pull!
There's sounds, I mean, just there's random stuff, like the bank teller facade, there's counting money and gold, that, you know, bags of gold being thrown down on the bank teller window. Fiddle and guitar stuff that, again, like, I'm playing the guitar sometimes over here. There's actually a lot. It only pops up here and there, but around the room you'll hear sort of clunking and clanking. There's just a lot of ambient sounds, like people walking on boardwalks that were recorded at Muir Woods, on the boardwalk there. And you know, occasionally a church bell or that kind of stuff. It's more ambient stuff that's coming out of different places. There's also a brass band playing Civil War era brass instruments coming out of Union Square to give Union Square a little nice polish to it as opposed to the brothel. I think in a lot of the one reason why I'm attracted to the historical soundscapes too is to try and put yourself in another time and place in which you have things missing that you don't realize you hear in the present day. So an absence of 21st century sounds is important to me as well. So I need to get these sounds very clean, absent of planes going overhead and cars going by on the freeway next door and that kind of stuff, so that when I fix it all up, clean it up, mix it together, and you put the headphones on or whatever kind of exhibit setup you have, you can actually feel transported and not have it be sullied by 21st century sounds around you.
To do this, Roth sometimes drives hundreds of miles to other states to record exactly the right sound.
How long did it take you to design this exhibit?
You know, it's hard to say. It takes a few weeks of me just thinking about it in the shower. And then I start to just gather the sounds, think about what sounds I have in my big library, and then think about what are sort of the most unique sounds that I want to go out and get record, like the melodeon, for instance, or the banjo. I mean, these are things that are very specific. Oh.
In an instant, every one of those specific sounds disappears. We realize it's 4:30. The exhibit's closed for the day, and it has an off button.
For me, it's both peaceful and also kind of shows you what what sound can do as far as making the space feel different. Not just making it exciting or not exciting, but actually make it feel bigger or smaller or more interesting.
It's a physical change. I mean, it feels like a physical change.
Yeah, sound is cool.
That's Andrew Roth speaking with KALW's Casey Miner. For more information and to hear more from our audio file series, you can go to our website, kalw.org. Here are a couple more musical sounds we found in our daily lives. This is the sound of oatmeal, recorded by Leela Day, and the sound of a brewing coffee pot, recorded by Christine Stolakis.
We can actually feel sound. If it's loud enough, you can, and low enough, you can feel it. It's visceral.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba, and that's Bernie Krause. He's dedicated decades to recording natural soundscapes from around the world. He's been speaking with KALW's Martina Castro and Julie Kane about his work in soundscape ecology and his massive library of sound. We now rejoin their conversation.
Krause actually got his start in music. He was trained in violin at a very young age.
Later, he recorded with some big-time musicians like The Doors, The Monkees, Stevie Wonder, and George Harrison.
He was among the first musicians to experiment with synthesizers, and he worked on movies like Rosemary's Baby.
What have you done to it?
And Apocalypse Now.
But he was looking for something more, and in 1968, he and his creative partner, Paul Beaver, decided to make an album that would incorporate natural sounds.
The album was called In a Wild Sanctuary.
When Beaver passed away suddenly, Krause took that as a sign and left the musical world for the natural one, for good.
Finally, in 1979, I went back to school and got my PhD in bioacoustics, finished it in 1981. And little by little found ways to, kind of make a living at it by recording in the field for museums and aquaria and zoos and doing installations, sound installations in these various places.
He's been building his collection of soundscapes ever since.
What we're looking for is a home for this archive, an institutional home, place where it's going to get some use, where people can study what's happening to the changing soundscapes. And what I want is a place that's going to deal with this thing in an interdisciplinary way, one that's going to involve not only biology and bioacoustics and music and theater, medicine. All of these things apply to this particular collection.
I don't know if you want to take a break, but I have one other follow-up question, may sound stupid, but... Just imagine, for someone who might not understand what that means or why that's important, could you answer why is that something that we should... Why should we care about that?
You want to care about that for the same reason that you want to care about animals disappearing from the face of the planet. And it's important because it's a language. And it's important to preserve because it has that narrative in it. And it's a historical narrative. It's a musical narrative. It tells us about so many things about ourselves and how we're doing in relationship to the rest of the living world around us. That's why it's important. For me, I can't think of very much more important because it really signals how quickly things are changing. And especially with global warming, which I think is the most formidable thing we've got to deal with now. So I would just pay some very careful attention to that and hope that others would too, because contained within it is all the stuff we need to know.
That's Bernie Krause. He spoke with KALW's Martina Castro and Julie Kane. If you want to know more about Krause's field of study, soundscape ecology, you can read all about it in his book, The Great Animal Orchestra, Finding the Origins of Music in the World's Wild Places. And here's another piece of music from a somewhat less wild place, an egg carton held closed with a rubber band.
Hi.
And that was a 3-year-old child. Those sounds were recorded by Alyssa Kapnick. As you can probably tell by now, we do a lot of listening around here, and it's changed the way we hear the world. And yes, more and more, we're hearing the music in regular sounds. So here's what Martina heard after her conversation with Bernie Krause.
So I'm in my laundry room in my apartment building, and I'm going to share with you the sound of the dryer. Okay, do you hear that? It goes, it's a lower note. It goes.
And this is what happened when Julie started listening closely to her daily life.
So I'm in my bathtub, and one of the things I've been doing a lot lately is dunking my head, my ears underwater, and just laying there listening to what things sound like through water. So, are you ready? Here we go.
These musical sounds we've shared with you from our daily lives have inspired our resident sound engineer and composer to see what they'd sound like if maybe they were all happening at the same time. So, in honor of Bernie Krause's Great Animal Orchestra, we present to you the Great Cross Currents Orchestra. Hit it, Seth!
Runner remains seatbelt in.
And that's it for today's orchestra edition of Cross Currents. The show was produced by Martina Castro and Julie Kane, edited by Casey Miner, and engineered by Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor, and Holly Kernan is our news director. Special thanks to Maya DePaula Hanica and Liz Pfeffer for their production help, and to Mary Willis for her wonderful fact-checking prowess. And to the rest of our team for their musical recordings, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Alyssa Kapnick, Mary Reese, Christine Stolakis, and Ray Sue Sussman. And mostly thanks to you. KALW is listener-supported, local, and independent radio. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.